Hello.
Hey, Rob, it's Flora from Every Little Thing.
Hey, Flora, how are we doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, another day in paradise.
Where am I finding you right now?
I am just outside of Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, heading to Illinois.
Back in April, we talked to some essential workers on the front lines of what was at the time a new pandemic. It's been 8 months, and we wanted to see how they're doing and what's changed. If you want the best possible experience of this podcast, I recommend that you listen to that episode first so you know everybody and their stories. We'll put a link in the show notes. Today, we're going to start with Rob.
I'm Rob. I am a truck driver.
Will you catch me up? Give me the high point of the last 7 months.
Things getting back to normal was definitely a high point. They got real slow. Like, I lost a quarter to a third of my income because my company hauls a lot of furniture, a lot of tires. So furniture stopped selling a good deal, and our factories shut down. So I had to learn to find every place we could to just chop a dollar here, a quarter there. Telling the kids, hey, I hope you like mac and cheese and hot dogs because there's going to be a lot of that in your future. But made it through.
The last time we talked, you mentioned you were worrying about your dad getting sick.
Yeah, my father got it, and he knows exactly who it was. And, you know, everything in Alabama opened back up for the most part, just social distance. And he went out to a bar with his buddies. Now that he doesn't get thinking to see after a while, and you know, he's having cabin fever too. So he was hanging out with his buddies, and 2 days later, his buddy called him and said, hey, I just tested positive, so did the wife. Oh. Oops.
How did he do?
He was, I'll be fine. And and I call, hey, how you doing? Feel like shit. The next day, how do you feel? Like, worse shit. He said, man, it felt like somebody beat the hell out of him for a couple of days. He was just completely drained, completely dead feeling. But he got through it after about 4 or 5 days of it. My biggest concern was me bringing home something because I'm everywhere. And it's like, I'm the one worried about it. Y'all are the ones getting it.
So how are you feeling about the rising cases now?
It pisses me off. it's like, we're doing good. Put a damn mask on. It'd be nice to get back to the way we were. Maybe not the closed upness. I'd hate that, but the way people's attitudes were in the beginning of this. Just the, oh crap, we need to help each other. Was going in Mount Eagle, Tennessee. And this woman has like, I think she bought every dang item they had at Wendy's. She had 4 bags and 2 3-carriers. I mean, the bags, like you've got your extended family over and you ran a McDonald's size bag. So and I was like, you need a hand with that, ma'am? She's like, oh, I appreciate it. So I'm like, are you a little hungry? And she goes, no, I'm buying these for kids that are at home from school that provide on the free lunches at work or at school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you are awesome. You are a beautiful person. Mm-hmm. Awesome ass person. Where the hell are more of you?
What about the other side of the coin? Have you seen any bad behavior around masks or anything else?
I've only seen one person losing it about having to wear a mask. It was in Jersey at a rest area. They have Starbucks and all kinds of stuff. You know how they are. And I stopped to get me a cup of coffee, and this guy was at Chick-fil-A just losing his ever-loving mind just on this woman that was behind the counter. he wants his effing chicken sandwich, blah, blah. I mean, that poor woman, she didn't deserve it. But she had this look on her face like, I don't give a damn what you say. Put on your mask or walk away. And she slid one to him, and he wouldn't put it on. It's like the amount of energy spent by this man to complain about a mask. I was dumbfounded by it. Like, dude, you could have put that mask on that she handed you, ordered your chicken sandwich, got your chicken sandwich, ate your chicken sandwich, and gotten 10 miles down the damn road by now.
Do you feel safe when you go into truck stops?
I'm doing a lot better going into them, because at the beginning, I went in to hit the bathroom, got the hell out, or went in to grab a shower, and I got the hell out. I did not want to be around people. Nope, done. And I'm better at it now, but I'd say, you know, I was in one a couple weeks ago, and this guy was just right on my back. Almost close enough I could feel his breath. So I open up my jacket, I stick my head in there, and I just made the most atrocious just... It's amazing. You cough like you're about to... Like one of your lungs is coming out. It's amazing how fast people social distance from you.
Oh my God. Rob, I have to tell you, this is like true confessions, but I also do that. Is there anyone from our last episode on essential workers that you're curious about?
The flight attendant. I have to be away from people, but hearing him talk about every time he goes home, he has to quarantine. And he's never home long enough for that quarantine to stretch. It's like, I swear, I wanted to give him a hug.
Yeah, so my name is Justin, and I am a flight attendant. And I've been working since the start of the pandemic.
I remember when we last talked, it felt like you were in a really stressful moment.
Yes, I was. But I feel better now. I'm not afraid of getting sick, because I can't, if I worry about getting sick, that means I'm going to worry about every single touch point of my day. And I can't live that way. Am I going to blame myself that I touched my eye after I touched some money that I was counting, that I, you know, took my mask off at the wrong time when someone sneezed? That's too many things to think about.
Yeah, you can't. It's too tiring.
It's debilitating. So I'm not, say, Lysoling my bag like I used to every time I got home anymore. I don't wipe down the hotel rooms like I used to for that reason. I said, you get to pick like four things that you can wipe down.
What are they?
So I do the remote control. I do the bedside like lamp, the alarm clock. And then wherever I lay my stuff out, that surface gets wiped down.
What about masks on the plane? Have you had to be an enforcer?
Yeah. So I was standing in the middle of the cabin doing the demo. You know, we point to the exits and everything. And there was a gentleman on an aisle seat right next to me who people will pretend like they're sleeping and they'll pull it off of their nose because they think we won't wake them up.
Their mask.
Yes. So I tapped him on the arm and I said, sir, I'm sorry to wake you, but just make sure that you have your nose covered as well. And he ignored me and he went back to sleep. So I waited a few seconds and then I said something again. And he kind of snapped and said, it is over my nose. And it plainly wasn't. So I walked away and I came back. And now everyone's looking at me because they see it's a battle of the wills, right? Who's going to win? Is there accountability? And so I tapped him on the arm again and I kind of gave the script. I realize it's uncomfortable. I apologize that, you know, you have to wear this right now, but everybody does, myself included. So I asked him again. And he got really close to my face. I mean, like 3 inches away. All that said, I went to tell the lead flight attendant and nobody would back me up. Nobody would do anything about it. So in that moment, you know, all those customers see that happen and they walk away thinking if they were going to be non-compliant, they see that there's space for them to do that. And if they feel unsafe, they see that no one's going to stick up for their safety. And that's an uncomfortable feeling. And it made me mad. And I told my crew at the end of our trip, I said, I'm really disappointed in the fact that you wouldn't back me up on this. And you know what? They actually they apologized.
Really?
they said, we're sorry, you're right. It's uncomfortable. And we don't feel like we are equipped to address the situation in a way that doesn't escalate it. That's a low at work for sure.
How do you manage your feelings at work? Like with that mask guy, are you just so pissed off when that happens?
Yeah, because I feel like that's no different than saying you need to have pants to eat here. And you're like, I have them, but you're carrying them over your arm. Like, you're not meeting the standard. And I mean, if you don't realize that you breathe out of all the holes in your face, I mean, hello. And I've also told people when they say things about the mask, well, you know what? Travel's optional. I mean, you know, like.
I like that. Travel's optional.
A good therapist will tell you that anger deserves a voice too. So I gave it one. Flying in a plane is public transit. It's just like being on a bus. So you have to be compliant. And we try to be patient with you. But at the end of the day, just know if you're removed from the plane, we're not flexing our power muscle. We're doing it for all the people who can't remove you themselves. You have a choice before you get on the plane. So think about it. Think really hard. And if you don't want to do it, drive, take the bus, or walk down the middle of the road. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, that gave me a lot of satisfaction.
I mean, I'm standing a little taller, I'm not going to lie.
Is there anyone from our last episode who you're curious about?
Someone who stood out to me was Tamasha. I think she was a teacher. I loved when she said she missed her students because I've missed those engagements with passengers. And what's her airplane feel like when she goes back to work? Has she been able to stay in touch with all of her students? Does she feel like they're staying on track?
So my name is Tamasha Amedi, and last time we talked, I was a fifth grade teacher, but now I am the assistant principal at the same school.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you. It was like a wild, very scary process, but I got hired in late July, and I've been the assistant principal since then.
So you work at an elementary school outside of Seattle.
Yes.
How many kids are at the school?
485.
485. And are you guys remote or in person?
We are mostly remote. We have opened up for students who are usually served by special education classrooms. It's an option to come to school for half the day. And the rest of our students are in full remote still.
And they've been remote all year?
Yes. Our superintendent decided early that we'd stay in distance until second semester. And that's just been like a relief because then we don't have to live every day like, are we going to go to hybrid next week? Are we going to stay in distance? Like, what's happening?
What's it been like for you? I mean, now you're responsible for over 400 students.
Yeah. I think it depends on how zoomed in or out I am. Like, if I zoom really into like one interaction with one family, I'm like, woo, look at me helping people, you know?
Well, give me an example of that.
Okay, yeah. So I am an emergent bilingual. I speak Spanish, and we have a lot of families that speak Spanish, and my Spanish is fine. I'm growing, but I've really learned a lot of like technical support Spanish terms.
Like Spanish IT.
Yeah. For example, the at sign I've learned is arroba, which is a cool word and critical while I'm trying to explain to families that they have to type in a child's email address and then like nombre usuario, which is your username, contraseña, password. And then I've had to practice mayúscula and minúscula, which is like capital and lowercase. I apologize, by the way, to every like native Spanish speaker.
How much of your day is doing this kind of support?
Well, in September, it was 90% of my day.
How many families would you end up interfacing with?
A rough estimate, like 20.
A day?
Yeah, about 20 families a day. But supporting families with just like logging into their computer and being like, look, now your kid can do it. And watching the families watch as I like hand the iPad to the 5-year-old who's like, I get it. And like, it's just like rocking whatever assignment is posted for them, you know, that can feel really good. And I'm like, yes, I helped make something happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You said that when you zoom out, it's different.
Yeah, it's even though more kids have internet, more kids have devices, it's just crushing how many people are losing what they critically need to just survive. Like, oh, this family, like the mom got COVID and had to go to the hospital. And so they're living with the aunt, but the aunt lost her job. And so they don't have internet anymore, but we can't give them Comcast internet. So can we get a hotspot? But the hotspot isn't working. And I'm just like, geez, you know?
Do you feel like there are any kids who have been completely left behind? Like, have you seen that happen?
Yes, it sucks. And it's not that many, you know, but we've got kids who we've had a hard time tracking down, had a hard time communicating with, and it's November and they've still had little to no access to school. And we have no idea how they're doing because we're having such a hard time communicating with them. I think I just saw a survey that was like 94% of kids have internet. And I was like, I question that from my experience, but also fine. What about those 6% of kids? Like, those 6% of kids still deserve internet. We can't be like, done. The majority is not the goal. You know, like, I'm not going to be proud that like 94% of families know what's going on right now. You know, like, I want 100% of families, and it can feel like an impossible feat. And the same people continually like fall through the cracks of our system because we stop and celebrate once we get to like 80 or 90%.
Is there anyone from the last episode who you're curious about?
I've been really curious about the person who was working in the pharmacy and like couldn't close. Now that it's like been a while, and was she ever able actually to close? Like, was it a good thing? Like, is she fine? I know, like, I really wanted to check in with her.
And that's what we're going to do after the break.
My name is Lucy, and I formerly worked in a pharmacy.
So you left?
Yeah, pretty soon after we talked, actually.
What happened? How did it all go down?
I had just taken all of my paid time off because I wanted to see where they were going to go with the precautions and if, like, upper management were going to really do anything. And they kept saying, like, we're encouraging delivery, we're encouraging people to do curbside pickup, but it's not even listed on the website. It's like, that's my last straw, I'm done.
Did you have a flame out moment? Like, did you get to leave on some kind of really dramatic note?
No, and so funny, you know, because you work in retail and you're always like, I'm going to tell them off. I'm going to tell them all the things that are wrong with this place. And just, no. So I called my immediate manager first, and then I called HR and let them know that I didn't really feel like it was safe at work, and that was it. It was so uneventful. Honestly, it's sad. I worked there for 3 years, and I didn't even really get to say goodbye to my coworkers because I had taken paid time off, and then I just quit from there. Normally, you know, you'd go out to a bar, and you'd all have a goodbye dinner, but it definitely felt odd.
Did you have any feeling of like, oh, I'm bailing on my coworkers?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I was the assistant manager, so I did feel pretty awful leaving my crew. It's like this combination of huge relief and just as much guilt. Abandoning that essential worker work. You know, like, we do need people to work in pharmacies. We do need people to work in grocery stores. We do need people to deliver packages. And so I felt bad dropping out of that group of people who was, like, stepping up to help during all of this. Like, I realize that is not a decision that, you know, the majority of essential workers could make. Like, I'm in such a privileged place to be able to say, like, I don't want to work this dangerous job anymore. I'm just going to step away and not do it. Now I'm running a small business selling herbal tea. And it's been something I've wanted to do for a long time. And I really, really, really appreciate my wife for being willing to, you know, cut back on everything so that we could make this work.
Is there anyone from the last episode who you're curious about?
I hope everyone's doing all right. Everyone sounded so exhausted.
Hello.
Hey, good to talk to you again. It's Flora from ELT.
Hey, my name is Jacob. I used to be a label printer service technician, and I got laid off. So I went back to a previous job I had where I am handling packages here in Indianapolis.
Tell me more. What does that mean, handling packages?
What the facility does is freight comes in on planes, like packages, customer packages come in on planes. We unload them off the planes, sort them, and then send them back off on another plane to wherever they're going. Another thing in our job, like this week we're doing test shipments for Pfizer for their vaccine.
So these Pfizer's vaccine has to be kept at these super sub-zero temperatures, right?
Yeah, I think it's negative 90 something Fahrenheit. So essentially it's a cardboard box with a cooler inside of it with a box shaped thing of dry ice and then the racks of vials. So this week they're sending out, as far as I know, empty boxes or maybe vials with water in them or something just to test and see how they survive shipment. And then once it gets approval, we'll be shipping them every day.
Do you think that it'll feel different to move those vaccines? Like, do you think that you'll feel some sense
proud?
Of... Yeah.
Probably, yeah. You know, a lot of people think of shipping and they think of how their Amazon package gets to them. They don't think about how anything ever gets anywhere. Because of the thousands of people every night who go to work just so everyone can get everything they need.
How did you feel about going back to this job?
It was a job that I was glad to have gotten away from. It's very hard work. And the pay is okay, but it's not great. Yeah, we go in at about 7 p.m. and work until about 4 in the morning. And I was glad that that part of my life was over and I was going to be able to move to a job where I could, you know, move up and, you know, eventually be able to buy a house. And then I ended up getting laid off and we didn't work for a few months, me or my fiance.
How's your fiance doing?
She's working. Actually, we're working together now since we both ended up without a job. We even work the same area, which is nice. We're actually in our car driving, doing DoorDash deliveries right now. We have to do it just to be able to have enough to pay rent.
How much DoorDashing are you doing?
Basically, anytime we're awake and not at work. So early morning and afternoons.
Thanks for squeezing this in. I feel like this is last priority.
Fine.
It should be.
It's fine. I think it's good to get the word out on how people are having to live right now. I feel like this isn't uncommon. Honestly, if we've been stressed about anything, it's stressed about having enough money to pay our bills.
Are you two holding up okay?
It's funny. I think after surviving being at home with no income for a couple months together, it almost seems like we can kind of do anything. We basically spend every minute of every day together since we work together and live together, and it goes pretty well, to be honest. I guess it shows me how much I really do love her.
Aww. You're bringing tears to my eyes.
Oh.
That's really sweet. I'm glad you guys found each other.
Yeah, me too.
Every Little Thing is produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Emma Munger, So Wiley, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Sam Baer and Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. Goodbye.
I'm going to ask, and you can tell me no, but I am doing the horn motion.
You get an even more special one. I'm driving through a tunnel at PA.
I love that one. Sorry to everyone in the tunnel.
Yeah, they're like, what the hell's wrong with that idiot?